This is part two of our interview with Dan Fisher on building a program.
Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
What do you think the challenges are of following up on a 30-1 season? You know, having now, there's obviously expectations.
Yeah, I think that you just kind of the realization that we're gonna have goals and we're gonna have big dreams, but our path might not be the same. You know, so I don't expect to go undefeated or you know, so I just. Now, it's going to be how we deal with it if we do lose a game we didn't think we should have. I think that'll be the biggest challenge. And we did a pretty good job of this year, but I guess it's just figuring out ways to quiet the noise.
Yeah. What do you think is more important as a college coach, to know like X's and O's or motor learning stuff and be a great volleyball coach, or to be better on the other side, like building your program? Getting it with the administration, getting the community behind you.
The short answer is, I think at a high level, building a program by a very small margin. But I'll backtrack to Mike Heber, because he was the first one that kind of got me thinking. He said, "Hey Dan, you got to decide if you want to be a great coach or you want to build a program." And I think they're not mutually exclusive. I think all of the top coaches are good in the gym, but I do think building a program is more important, being a program builder, because if you're great in the gym, but you don't care about recruiting, there's a talent minimum. If you don't get fans in the seats, that's going to hurt recruiting. I think it all matters.
Right.
What were some mistakes you made along the way when building your program?
Certainly recruiting. There's sometimes the idea that if we don't get this kid, like, no one's going to be left, or, making a mistake on someone that wasn't maybe as good of a player as you could have gotten. When I got here, the other one I would say scheduling. That was a part of the job I knew nothing about. And so, there was 2 years in a row, my second and third year, where we were 49 RPI and then 46. And both those years, the selection committee did not take us, even though we thought we had good resumes. And if I was a little better at recruiting or scheduling, then I think we might've gotten in. And Chris Poole from Florida State's actually mentored me a lot there, and he's really good at it. And then the final, well, there's a lot of mistakes. final one that comes to mind is, I think this was year two. We kind of aligned ourselves with a club in town. And I was coming from California thinking it's no big deal to have your assistant coach at this club versus another one. And I did a couple coaching clinics, and I just thought it would be a good opportunity for my assistants to make more money, and maybe some of my players could get a coaching club job. And it just turned out to, it just pissed everyone off in the community, and ended up being a headache.
Yeah. Well, back to you mentioned recruiting as maybe some mistakes you made there. Was that just not getting those players? Was it just the girls' choice, or were there things that you could have done, I guess, differently in hindsight?
Yeah, I don't think you ever feel like you know how to recruit. I guess my biggest advice for recruiting is to you just have to stay uncomfortable for long periods of time. There's always this, people like to say, "Oh, I'm done with the 2019 class," and I think and there's this desire to feel like I've completed a task, but I think the best recruiters never really think they're done, or will find a way to, get a kid to walk on for a semester, or find, they'll figure out a way to that they're never done trying to better their roster. And so it's change. We're going through a big change. I don't know if you guys are up to speed on all the recruiting changes, but the NC2A is doing a lot to try to slow it down. Mm-hmm. But when I first got here, it's like, you know, you're all of a sudden you get the job and, you know, all these Big Ten schools are committing freshmen and you're like, I don't even know who these players are. And so this idea that like, if I don't commit a kid early, I'm not going to get a good kid is, you know, it's, you know, you always feel pressure from it as a recruiter. So it's the ability to like be able to look at a pretty good player and say no and go, oh, we're going to have to wait and we're going to make the tough choice and try to get someone better.
Is there a year you've found that's been most successful that you've committed kids that they are?
You know, we haven't been successful with early recruiting. And part of that's I haven't really tried because I don't really like it. So most of the kids that have been of the earlier side that have been pretty good have been early junior year, you know, or maybe the summer going into their junior year. But we've only had, I think there was only one or two that committed as sophomores. And those ones usually put the pressure on me. They were kind of going, hey, what's the deal? Are you going to offer me? Or because Duke wants to know. Mm-hmm. I'd say for the domestic, you know, for the kids, it's been junior. And then, of course, you know, foreigners are later, and the transfer portal is changing
things. Yeah, for sure. It's going to be interesting to see how that continues to change things.
Yep.
So we mentioned how you were the Phil Dalhauser of the 2003 Beach game. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how your Beach background has influenced your coaching.
I definitely think just what we talked about before is, you know, the idea that, you know, that everything matters, that, you know, and I think also that I also think it changed too for me because, you know, I played in college and during side out era. And then my first year professionally in Europe was the switch to rally scoring. And I just think that there was a realization that everything matters at a high level. Like if you're middle at 25 all, can't cover a ball, it matters a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I just think the Beach, you learn that on the Beach. You can't have a glaring weakness. So I think that the girls that spend 4 years in my program and, you know, pretty well rounded.
Do you guys play much doubles, or in the spring, do you guys get out and get any Beach play in?
We do. And I would venture to say we probably play more sand or grass tournaments the girls do over the summertime than any program that doesn't have a Beach team. But I think it's a lot of like warm up drills, like, you know, half court over the neck type stuff where they're just, they're used to, you know, having to be on the ball.
And when's the last time you spiked on the Beach?
Well, we have last summer.
Okay.
Or no, actually, I was in Santa Barbara over break, and I got a couple games in. So I had about a month ago.
Well, but, maybe now's my chance to make it up.
Redeem yourself.
2019.
Well, can we play the Dino together? Is that are we combined 80?
You have to
I'm
be
42.
I'm 36.
That's so close. Math.
Yeah, a couple more years.
Okay, I think that's. Yeah, that'd be good.
Okay, I'll start training for it. So you've coached at the men's, actually probably more at the men's than the women's level, but coached both levels. Do you change your coaching style when working with different genders?
It's been a while since I've coached guys. Well, we still have some guys come to our summer camps, but I don't change a whole lot. We teach skills the same way. The only difference I've noticed is I think there's a tendency on women's teams to bottle things up a little bit more. And so, you know, in a men's gym, if I thought two guys were kind of taking it a little too far, I might let it go. Or if there's some weird tension, I might let it go a couple of days and see if it sorted itself out. But I think on a women's team, if I sense that someone seems pretty unhappy, I try not to let it fester.
And we have a question from listener Ben Lee. Have you taken anything from the style of play from the men's game to your program at Pitt?
Definitely. The main thing is just being really aggressive offensively. And if you look at our stats, I did a whole study on it 2 years ago, but essentially we would average, more errors than almost any other team, but they were like getting blocked errors, but I think we're 2-1 on getting more kills than our opponents. So, teams that play us, we crush their digs per set average. So we try to go for it and be pretty, without being, it gets reckless sometimes, but we try to be pretty aggressive out of system.
How do you train that?
You do a lot of virus and bounce drills, and we'll do, this sounds silly, but we'll do like a drill or like an error correction, and we'll say, hey, for the next 10 minutes, like the only error is if you don't take the hardest swing of your life. and we'll sit and we'll yell, swing, crush, like go for it. And what I found with doing stuff like that is it's surprising how few errors you make when you're going for it.
Do you have players who are hesitant to take risks?
Oh yeah. I think the majority,
yeah.
I think that's, if you guys ever heard of the book Top Dog?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a whole section in that about how female athletes versus male athletes, uh-huh, as the stakes go higher, like the female athlete in general has a tendency to pull back and be conservative. And so I think my observation of the women's game is typically the longer the rally goes, the more tips happen. And so we try to train in bursts of 30 to seconds to a minute of high intensity and then we chill. And but yeah, I think our style, I guess, would be probably a little bit more on a men's basketball coach. We hoot and holler and we try to encourage and be really aggressive.
That sounds like a fun way to play.
It can be exhausting.
But I'm guessing it helps the girls look forward to practice. And I mean, anytime you can get people feeling like they can play free and not being judged for making mistakes. And it's got to be a great environment to be a part of. Obviously, it's working.
Yeah, it's there have been times where I've questioned that philosophy, and one of them I'm questioning it now because, a lot of what I've done, I think, helped get us in the NCAA tournament, and now I'm at a phase of going, okay, is the way we're playing, do I need to reevaluate that to take another step? So
against Michigan, you felt like your style of play held you guys back?
Not necessarily that game, but I just, we did a quick study on what our numbers were like against other top 25 teams. And then all of a sudden, we didn't have a serve and pass advantage. We didn't necessarily have an out of system defense advantage. I'm trying to, I believe in playing aggressively, but I'm trying to stay open to, am I really training the best way?
Mm-hmm. Cool. I'm excited to follow along. So we have some questions from your assistant coaches, from Lindsay Bohonic. I don't know if I said that right.
Bohonic, yeah.
And Kellen Patron.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go. We got a couple of them, so go through them. One of them is, what are you exceptional at and why?
Exceptional at controlling the mood at the gym.
And why?
Why am I exceptional at that?
Yeah, I guess.
How do you do it?
I think it was emotional intelligence. I don't know where I first learned this concept, but the most powerful emotion in the room typically controls the energy of the room. And so I think you have to have pretty good awareness of what the state of the gym is. And if it's pretty flat, you got to raise the intensity level. And if everyone's really stressed and nervous for a game, I probably need to crack a joke. I think I'm pretty good at that.
How would you describe the mood? Like what are you going for?
There's very, very few practices where we do a light serve pass. And so we will obviously shorten the duration of the practice, but I like really high intense, high intensity firing practices.
So what do you do to prep yourself? Say, the season's gone on and maybe you're a little fatigued and we're up late. How do you make sure you maintain that?
I've wondered that about myself and I don't have a good answer, but sometimes it just kind of, I really believe at coaching at a level to win. And when I'm not seeing a level to win in the gym or like at least a good, like the intent's not there, I guess I just turn it up another gear.
And what is an area you can grow in as a coach?
Recruiting for sure. Evaluating better, selling better. It's really hard. And then the other one is something I'm kind of learned more about lately and I'm still learning just increasing like variability in my practice, just trying to, have a better learning environment.
So what do you do to grow? Like how do you push yourself
in these areas?
Yeah.
I think with recruiting, it's a whole staff effort of talking to other, of learning from other people that are good at recruiting, reading books on selling, whatever we can do. From like the variability side, like just, learning more about I listen to podcasts all the time. I read, I try to keep learning how people learn and then try to be creative with my practice plan so that we maximize that.
Would you say, I could see like after your first couple of seasons, you had success, but it's probably easier to be like, oh yeah, well, we lost 10 matches, so we've got a lot to change. Do you feel like it's harder to be open to change when, you win a lot?
Yeah, I guess, good question. I think there's it's obviously good to be grounded in some principles and kind of know how the style you want to play and how you want to perform skills. But it is kind of the double-edged sword of like thinking you have it all figured out. And from my experience in sports, once you think you have it figured out, you you get reminded really quickly.
Yeah.
So the way I do that is by not, just querying us, like I told you, how did we do against the best?
Another one. What would you say to your 25-year-old self?
At 25. I was still playing in Europe and I would probably tell myself to enjoy all the free time I had. I was my third year living in Spain, I think, or second. And I love speaking Spanish. I miss it a lot. I miss living in Spain. So I would probably remind myself to enjoy that a little bit more and then, But that was, I don't know if it was 24, 25, 26. That was right around when I started thinking more about, because right out of college, I thought I was going to be a teacher or counselor. And then that was more when I started thinking about coaching in college. And so I guess I would tell myself that, there's a lot you don't know about what coaches do.
Yeah,
I thought it was just like on the court.
And then their final question from Lindsay and Kellen, what advice would you give to those entering the coaching profession?
The biggest one would just be that there's just a lot of coaching opportunities. And a lot of the, I guess I hear, especially from younger males, a lot of people reach out to me and go, hey, I want to be a Power Five head coach. And I guess I don't know that many Power Five head coaches that set out to be that. They just, so I think it's probably the Marv Dunphy advice of just, you know, get really good at coaching and the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah. You get better by doing.
Yeah.
I was just remembering, you were at Pacific when I was at Pepperdine and Billy was at Northridge, right? Yep. You were assisting there at Pacific.
Yep.
And you guys had good teams while you were there.
At UOP?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you guys always beat us when we went up there.
We had two really bad years and then our last year were pretty good. And then yeah.
Chris Thomas was there when you were there?
No. So when I sat there and so I was the starting setter my senior year and he was a senior in high school.
Yeah. You know, no, I was thinking when you were coaching though, you were coaching him. No,
I never coached him.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
But yeah, he was good. So were you, buddy?
No, I was medium. He was good. we had good players. Cool. Well, this was fun. I was glad we got to spend time picking your brain. And I think we also got to lock in finally a time where we're going to get to play together. And I'm not going to turn you down. So, I mean, I think this worked out all around.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on. And I just appreciate what you guys are doing for the sport.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for sharing all your knowledge. And looking forward to watching you guys continue to do what you're doing. And I wish I want to get in the gym and experience the energy and the all you're bringing. So hopefully we can make a trip out there.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Cool.
Might Sounds need to bring good. More than a sweatshirt this time, John.
Yeah. You can come in maybe April or something.
Yeah, I'll come in August. That's a better time for me.